If you don't already know, I want to remind you that we have done a very large, lengthy sermon series that we just finished recently through the Old Testament. And if you missed all that, don't worry, it's all available somewhere. But we're going to start the New Testament pretty soon, beginning with the life of Jesus, and that's going to start, we're trying to time that with Christmas a little bit, so a couple more weeks away. And so today what we are doing is we are taking part of the most of the month of November to do some individual messages that we've not been able to do. We were able to do them. We could always stop along a series and do other things. But we're taking this month to talk about some one-off topics before we get into the life of Jesus in the New Testament. And so today, by the way, the next 2 weeks after today, both of those topics, I'm excited about them individually. I can't wait to get to those. I hope you'll be here throughout November as we transition between longer series. But for today, we're doing something that we do every year that's very special to us. And I'm so excited. If you've been around Lighthouse, you know that this time of year, we focus on some other programs or ministries that are doing great things in our region and community that we want to highlight and celebrate them and support them and be good to them. And so every year around this time, we have one Sunday where we talk about this time of year is our Be Rich campaign, And when I use that title on the screen, and talk, use that term, some of you who've been around are like, oh good, I love this. This is always an energizing time for Lighthouse. And so if you've been around long enough, you're already into it. But if you're new and you're like, what is this about, Arlen? Is this something where are you going to ask for money today? The answer is yes, but not for us. In fact, I'm just going to confess, not for the first time, a flaw in my leadership. And it is a flaw in my leadership. Is I don't talk about money very often at all. And I don't talk about money for us at all. You know that. It doesn't come up much here. Because I feel self-conscious, because it's self-serving, it feels like. And I know I need to. We've been in this building now that was given to us about 6 years now, and we've slowly replaced the roof that was leaking over time everywhere and got that longer term fixed. But we had a parking lot that's disintegrating to the ground outside, needs to be totally redone from the bones. Hundreds of thousands of dollars needed for that. We have flooring inside and out, apparently, that need to be replaced. It just all takes money, and I never talk about it, and that's a flaw. I know I need to step forward. My team can remind me. I need to be more bold to make those asks. And I don't like to do it because that's not what I want us to be about. And we probably have to talk about some of these things next year, but not today. So I'm bad about that. And you can, you know, send me a note later saying, man up, Arlen, and talk about money when you need to. I need to do that. But I'm not here to ask for money for Lighthouse today. I'm asking for you to join me as I give, and ask you to join me in giving to others outside of our organization. It's much easier for me to ask that and be excited about it. We partner with ministries that are doing wonderful things in our region and across our globe, and we want to celebrate them and support them. So I'm going to talk about them at the end, but first I want to use the scriptures, because we get that title, Be Rich, from something that the Apostle Paul said in the scriptures. In fact, I want to remind you, Paul was a one-time Pharisee, we mentioned that last week, who was reached with the gospel of Jesus Christ, and it changed everything for him. And he became a missionary going all over the Middle East and all over the coastal cities of the Mediterranean Sea, spreading the good news of Jesus Christ everywhere. People came to faith, and sometimes he'd stay there for a long time, sometimes for a short time. He'd leave behind believers, and he'd leave behind churches of believers who would gather in the name of Jesus Christ. Later, Paul would write letters to these churches to tell them kind of how to live the life of faith. One of the cities that Paul visited and stayed at was a city called Ephesus. Ephesus was a coastal city on the Mediterranean Sea in modern-day Turkey. And Ephesus was there, and very wealthy metropolis. People could move to an area near water like that. They could do commerce very easily by waterway as well as inland. And so Ephesus was a booming metropolis with lots of very wealthy people, but like all metropolises, also with poor people. And so Paul went there, stayed there for like 2 years and 3 months, and planted a work. And then he left. Later, he sent a young man named Timothy, who was his protege, a young protege, one of several he had, who he trained up to serve in ministry. And Timothy was 20 when Paul started working with him. He was in his upper 20s to early 30s by the time he arrived in Ephesus to be the pastor of that church or the pastor of those churches. So Paul was helping this young man know how to lead a church at a young, as a fairly young church leader. He wrote some letters to him that we call the pastoral epistles. Paul also wrote a letter to the church of Ephesus called the Book of Ephesians, as well as letters to Timothy. And in his letter to Timothy about how to lead the church at Ephesus, he tells him several things that we won't read. One of the things he mentions is that be careful because there'll always be people who will come into this gathering of believers, he said, who have ulterior motives. In other words, they aren't coming because of a love for Jesus Christ or an exploration of faith. They might come in because they see a community where there's a chance to get prestige or position or a niche market with which to make money. They're going to see opportunities to enrich themselves in some lane because there's a group there. He says, watch out for that because we're always about the wrong things and we need to be about what really matters and the true riches. And then Paul says some things that I want us to explore today. He says in 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 6 that true godliness with contentment is itself great wealth. Now, true godliness, think of that as God-centeredness without going into a whole sermon on it. People who are saying God's important in my life. I'm not just an emotional person, a person of physical health and mental well-being, but I also have a spiritual health, wellness that I need to have, a wholeness that I need to have from my creator, my maker, and I need to be aware that he's there and that he cares, and he speaks to me. I pray to him. I listen to him. I gather, and I apply what he's calling me to do in my life. That spiritual part of our being is such an important thing to keep healthy. And you do it every Sunday in part, not the whole thing, but just gathering on Sunday mornings, in person or online. When you gather, you're saying, look, I know that I want to start my new week by putting my faith at the forefront and putting God at the center. And that's a statement right there of God-centeredness. And not the only thing. You could just do that only that and miss the boat. But it's a part of being a godly person. A piece of it. And true godliness with contentment is itself great wealth. Now, how does contentment fit into great wealth? And the answer is simply this. You could have a lot of wealth and not feel like it because you want more and you don't feel wealthy. And you have very little and be content and you are indeed wealthy. In fact, we saw this 2 weeks ago in the story of Esther, didn't we? Remember the character named Haman? And how Haman had everything, all the wealth that you could imagine. He was rich, he had power, prestige, but he wanted more. He had one guy who would not respect him, and he said, until that goes right, his words, not mine, Haman said, all these good things in my life, they are all worth nothing to me as long as this one thing isn't what I want it to be. And sure enough, that one thing he pursued so hard that it destroyed him. And we don't want to be guilty of chasing the wrong things and missing the contentment. Here's the problem with chasing something else to make us feel content. It never works because contentment is not an external factor. It comes from within. And if it's something on the outside that you think you need to change to be happy, I promise you every time it will last a very short time and then the goalpost always gets moved. Because contentment comes from within. And when we say, I have so much, more than others, more than I need to live, I'm content, we are on the path to experiencing the wealth that some people who have a lot more than we do never experience, longing for more still. He says in verse 7, after all, we brought nothing with us when we came into the world, and we can't take anything with us when we leave it. Isn't that true? When you were born, you came into this world naked as a jaybird. And if you weren't, I feel sorry for your mama. I mean, right? And when we leave, we're taking nothing with us. There's no U-Hauls behind hearses. We know this, right? It's all things we have in this life. And what it is, it'll be gone one day. So why can't we enjoy the journey with what we have? He says in verse 8, so if we have enough food and clothing, let us be content. Food and clothing seems like a pretty low standard, doesn't it? Like food and clothing, that's it? I mean, how about a decent 401k and some options in the market? I don't know. Food and clothing, that seems like so little to have in order to be content. But whenever I read this, it always reminds me of something that I experienced a couple times through the years, many years ago. I've had a chance to take two trips in my life overseas to an impoverished nation, an underdeveloped nation. I was in the Philippine Islands twice and a couple other places before, but Philippines mainly. Landing in Manila, driving inland to where people were truly in poverty. I went there once by myself and once with my whole family and with a man who comes to our early service named Ted. We all went together to the Philippines on these two occasions. And I'll never forget when what poverty looks like became real to me instead of just an idea. Because all of us hear about it. We're like, yeah, I know. There are people who are struggling to live. We see ads on TV or we see a show depicting it. But it's always through a screen or just through information. It's different when you see it with your eyes and can feel it with your hands. I'm telling you. And we got over there the first time, and I'll never forget, we had a friend who had done a lot of ministry work across the whole country. But while he was there for an extended period of time, he decided to plant at least one or more churches because he wanted some gospel presences to be in the communities in which he was at. And he built a very small, simple building because everything is so simple there. And we went over there and helped fund that. And then we went over there to see it with our eyes, and we walked, I never forget, walking through the neighborhood around where that little church was built. And as we walked around the property, we saw, oh my goodness, we saw poverty like I've never seen. I mean, it broke my heart. We just wept. Not right away. We were too shocked to have tears. We would walk through things I can't describe to you. Houses that were just clustered together. They weren't even like you had to walk through one person's residence, so to speak, to get into the next. There's no privacy, no roofs over some spots, or not full roofs or walls, perhaps, open space, dirt floors. A different day, we were at some government railroad tracks where people could squat without getting ran off, and there was houses just built in both sides all the way down. Just to walk through there and minister to the people was so jarring, lice everywhere. It was just such a mess. And that first day we were there and saw so much of that for hours, we just were too stunned to take it all in, just seeing it with our eyes, feeling it with our hands. And we gathered that night at the church that they building that they had put there, and all these people poured in from these areas into the church. And we were shocked at how happy they were. They were smiling. They were so excited. They were singing. They were hugging. And when we saw that, we broke. I promise you, the tears just poured. I said, how could they possibly live like this and be happy? And then I started thinking about the United States and my home and how much all of us have and how miserable we are because we want some more. We need some more. And I thought, it was a life-changing moment. You could have food and clothing and be content. And we all have food. Most of us, if we did not eat this morning, it's because we probably chose not to. We probably have food today to somewhere. We will have food. Even if things are tight, we'll probably have food. There's food around here somewhere if you need to find some, okay? Clothing, if we have enough clothes to wear while the dirty ones are getting washed, right? Can we be content? And the answer is no, because there's more to be had. And Paul says, don't let that get you. That got Haman, and more was never enough because it's always a moving goalpost. It's always an itch that can never be scratched. In fact, longing for more is the destructive force. Verse 9 says this, but people who long to be rich, fall into temptation. What does that mean? Temptation is the things that we know we should not do, things that we know are unethical or not the right moral thing to do. But when the thing is, when we want something badly enough, we're willing to scrap our morals sometimes to get the thing we want more, right? We're willing to fudge the ethical lines because we want something so bad that it's just worth it. It has to be done. People who long to be rich will fall into temptation and are trapped by many foolish and harmful desires that plunge them into ruin and destruction. And I cannot begin to tell you in my life how many times I've worked because of what I do, even outside of the church world and some other things I've done in business that I don't need to get into today. But I've seen incredibly wealthy people in situations sometimes that are much younger and much more wealthy than I could ever understand, whose lives are a terrible tragedy of relationship destruction and misery to the core, but money's not a problem. And I'm like, can I find a way to make your money but not have any of your other problems, please? Because money does not mean problems, but it doesn't mean happiness either, and it's been proven over and over again. Just like the people I saw in the Philippines who didn't have any but were happy. It's not that you can't be happy with money or you can't be miserable without it. It just means the two are not correlated. And those who long for more end up falling into temptation and ruining themselves so often in the pursuit of things that don't matter as much. In verse 10, it says, "For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil." Not money itself. Don't hear me saying that money is bad. Some people have it, some people don't, some people get it. Here's the thing. It's the love of money. Jesus taught that money is a wonderful servant but a terrible master. That's Jesus' teaching, right? The love of money, the longing for being rich, we saw earlier. That's the root of all kinds of evil. That's what gets us on a bad path. And he says, and some people craving money have wandered from the true faith and have pierced themselves through with many sorrows. And it's a tale as old as time. But we all hope that we would do better as we crave it ourselves. Paul, in the following verses, talks to Timothy about how to lead by example. He says, Timothy, you're a young man. You need to teach it. You also need to do it. You need to live this way. And then he pivots from there and says, now here's how you teach it. And by the way, if anything I'm saying sounds like, you know, a scold, it's not. I think you know that. These verses are so motivating to me. They encourage me. They teach me that I have all I need to be truly wealthy because I could be content. They encourage me. And then he's going to give us some really practical advice about how to take it to the next step. He says in verse 17, teach those who are rich in this world. I want to pause right there because it's tempting when we read verses like this to think, oh, Paul's talking to Timothy about people who are not me. He's talking to the rich people, and I am not a rich people. Because I know people who have more. And I want to say to all of us, we are indeed rich in this world. See, the thing is again, we don't oftentimes get out and see in a world of 8 billion people. We just don't see how rich we are. I talk about the trip I took a couple times in those months I spent out of country where you see real poverty. If you've ever seen that and felt it and saw it, you know globally, all of us in this room are amongst the top few percent of the world's population when it comes to being well off. We all are. Most of us not only live in the most prosperous country in the world that other people are wanting desperately to come be a part of, but we live here and we probably live in middle class or close to it areas of our country. And so we are the richest of the world. But here's why we don't feel rich. We don't feel rich because we don't see the majority of people in this large world who are struggling to have anything. We don't feel rich because we see the other people living in the U.S. of A. in, you know, nearly middle-class areas, perhaps, who have more than we do. And we don't feel rich because our neighbor drives a nicer car, the guy down the street has a nicer house, that person got a promotion at their job, and this person has a big 401k. And because we see money around us amongst our riches who are bigger than us, we feel like we're not the rich. But we are, I want to say this to us, we are all the rich of this world. It's just, we got to see the right things. And so, what's going to be said next is for you and me. Teach those of us who are rich in this world not to be proud. In other words, don't think that I built this, right? This is me. I may have been born with it, or I may have earned it by the skills and energy and wisdom and ability God gave me, but that's a gift, and that is nothing to be proud about. I'm not better than, we're not better than others in the world who struggle more than we do. Nor are we worse than those of us in this world who struggle less than we do with money. Don't be proud. He says, teach them not to be proud and not to trust in their money, which is so unreliable. Let's be real. Money, fortunes have been made in a day and they've been lost just as quickly. Things can change in a New York minute in life, can't they? And so don't trust in those things. Instead, he says, their trust should be in God. Don't trust in our money. Trust in God, who richly gives us all we need for our enjoyment. Now, God doesn't richly give me all I want. I've learned that through personal experience and a lack of certain prayers being answered the way I prayed them. But he gives us all we need richly for our enjoyment. We need food and clothes, right? And we have it good. And so we trust that God will take care of us. Paul said elsewhere to somebody else, he says, my God will supply all your needs according to his riches. So if we can trust in God instead of the things that are less reliable, teach those who are rich in this world, he says. That's us. That's all of us today. And then he says in verse 18, tell them, that's us, tell them to use their money to do good. That reminds me of what Jesus did. He went about what? He went about doing good. Teach them to use their money to do good. They should be rich. There's that phrase, be rich. I want to pause there because that is where we get the name of our annual campaign called Be Rich. We get it from this phrase right here where Paul is telling, tell those who are rich in this world to be rich. And that's where we get the idea from. We'll talk about that more in just a moment. But they should be rich. How? How should we be rich? Well, we already learned one way. We saw at the very beginning of our scripture journey, back in verse number 8 today, we saw that, verse 6 today, we saw the reminder that when we can be God-centered and content, we have great wealth. So one secret to being rich is being content. Because you could have a lot and always want more. And here's the thing, I know how we are. Well, it's like Haman earlier. Like, if I just had that thing, then I'd be content. But every level you get to, including with money, there's always, I talk to people who have more in my line of work, and they're like, I know these other people in my orbit now who have more. If I could get to that level, I'd be set. The problem is the people at that level have people they know who are at another level, and they get to that level. It always moves. It always moves. And none of us are like, I can only get down to the level of other people in other places who are more impoverished than me. We there's always that more. And so part of being rich is just being content, folks. I have all I need. I want what I have. God's been good. That's a soul issue that if any of us could get a hold of it, and we could maybe start breathing and enjoying our lives a little bit better. But he's not done. He says, tell those who are rich in this world to be rich, how? In good works and generous to those in need, always being ready to share with others. That's powerful. Good works, that's our hands and feet. That's what we do with our energy and our time. We can all do something for somebody else that's not for ourselves in some backdoor way. We can be in good works. We can be generous people, rich in generosity to those in need, always being ready to share with others, people who have less than us. Here's the little hack, life hack I've learned along the way. And I say I've learned like I've arrived. I've not. I have to keep relearning this, okay? So maybe you can join me on this point. It's easy to look at the people we have who have more than us and say, if I just had that, I could do more. But if you look at the people who have less than us, we can say, how can I help you have more? So our focus point should be, look at how much I have and who has less and how can I help them, rather than who has more and how can I get it. And so be rich in good works and generosity, always being ready to share with others. That is how we can be rich. Verse 19, by doing this, they will be storing up their treasure as a good foundation for the future so that they may experience true life. Now, that's probably a good point about heaven and eternity, and I want to acknowledge that, but I don't want to go that direction this morning. Let's just acknowledge the eternal component of that verse and talk about this life. That when we do these things that make us be rich, we are storing up a good foundation for our future here as well, so we can experience true life. And here's why that's true. Some of you have already lived long enough to experience this. Most of us have, if we think about it. But the older we get, we don't look back on our lives feeling good about our lives and feeling good about who we are because we're like, man, I used to wear the nicest clothes. You should have seen my wardrobe back in the day, man. None of us look back in life and say, that's the mark. We might talk about a car we used to drive just to make conversation. But those things just don't bring us meaning or true life as we get older. They don't add to our future. A good foundation is this. We look back and we remember the things we did to make a difference, who we helped, how we served, what we did. That person that we met and we helped once, who we don't even know where they are anymore, but it meant the world to them back then. Those are the things that mean something to us as we move through life. They lay a foundation for us to truly live the way we never live when we're always chasing just a little bit more. Because then when we get a little bit more, we'll have scratched the invisible itch. No. It's doing good things that we can look back on and say, that mattered. And so, that's what Paul has to say about being rich. Let me take a little time before we're done today and talk about how, with those verses and with that teaching in mind, let's talk about our Be Rich campaign this year and how we can, once again in 2024, as a gathering of believers in the Lord Jesus Christ or people leaning into faith, how we can be rich and how we can support others. Now, we have made it a point to support other ministries outside of our church most of the time who are doing good things. It's very easy for churches to always want to start a new ministry to compete with the other ministries out there because it's got to be our brand, it's our credit, our whatever. And then all you have is more competing ministries that are doing the same thing as each other and all need more money, all need more manpower. So what we've tried to do more often is find ministries that are already rocking it, that are already doing a great job and say, how can we help you be better, meet your needs? How can we bless the blessers, right? How can we support you financially? How can we give you manpower rather than just competing in another way? Let's enhance you. And so we last year gave to three causes, and we were very able to do so. We're thankful for our goals that were reached and abundantly beyond. And this year, we'd love to do the same. We try to use some former ministries. This year, we have one brand new program we want to do something for. We have a program that was first time last year. We want to come back to a second time. And we have a repeated one that we've used for many years in the past, not every year, but here and there through the years. I want to present them to you. I want to talk about how we can be a part of what they're doing, this Be Rich campaign at Lighthouse. The first one I want to showcase is called Chicagoland Prison Outreach. This is new to us. But I didn't know, it came our way, and I was become so aware of the ministry they're doing, both in Cook County in Illinois and in Westville State Penitentiary in Indiana. And they go in, and they do in the prisons what we believe faith-based ministries would do. They bring the good news of Jesus Christ into the prisons, and they bring people to faith. They do the other things we thought a faith ministry would do. They teach how to live according to, you know, the ways of the Lord, and they teach discipleship and help people grow in their personal lives and into healthier individuals. But they do more than that. Chicagoland Prison Outreach also teaches people and prepares them with life skills and vocational skills so that when they get out, they can carry on. Whether that's training, education, skill sets, and helping them transition while they're still in and when they come out. Because a lot of people, they don't know what to do. They're not exactly got a resume that everyone wants to gravitate towards. They sometimes people just struggle. Others just, they fall back into the same things that put them back where they came from. In the first place. And so this program, what it does is it gives them skills so that they can become self-sustaining, productive members of society, which we all want to be. Every human wants to be that way. We want to feel like we can, there's a path forward. And so they prepare them and they give them those skills. Then they do one other thing. The men and women they minister to in prison, they get involved in helping their families on the outside because those families are often struggling. When you have a parent who's in prison, you're probably in some sort of impoverished state most of the time. And they find these families and say, how can we help them? How can we support them as we serve and help their parent, their mom or dad in prison, or their husband and wife in prison? And there are families, they help them at Thanksgiving with baskets, Christmas with needs, food banks, a couple other things. I don't have them all memorized. I've been really studying them, but they do a lot of amazing things for the families on the outside who are waiting and figuring out life. One of the things they do at the holiday season, you may have seen when you came in the building today, is they have an angel tree program that some of you are familiar with angel tree. It's where they put the names of somebody, like they'll say, there's a family in need. Here's a girl age 9. She would love to have this for Christmas. Here's a boy age 7 to have that. And they figure out these families who need, you know, some food supplies, some this kind of support, and some certain gifts. And they get those things down and they put them on a symbol and they attach it to a Christmas tree so someone can grab one of those things and say, I'll provide that item for that family or for that child. And of course, people have needs year round, but Christmas can be extra hard. An angel tree is a great way to bless somebody who is struggling, and especially kids in this case and families whose parent or loved one is incarcerated. And so we love Chicagoland Prison Ministry. On the way out, we came in this morning with a tree full of little ribbons to grab to sponsor gifts. And when I walked in here to start church, we were down to one. Because the 9 o'clock people got here before you and they cleaned us out, okay? They cleaned us out. So I got bad news. There's only one thing left. Maybe it's even gone. I don't know. It's like bare tree out there, okay? But we're going to bring more in next week. Jody's going to be here all month long to be back there by the tree, and she's involved with that ministry. She's going to, and her family is, and she's going to help us know what to do. You can see her after church, and she'll be glad to answer your questions and throughout the next couple of weeks about how you can be a part of that. Now, that's not all we're doing. In fact, what I'm going to ask us to do, that's a bonus. That's an extra. So do that if you can. But what we want to do is we want to raise some funds to give a check to this program in general to say, let's help you, and let's go and help you in person as well. So Chicagoland Prison Outreach is one of our three this year. The other one is a program we met last year for the first time, and I wish I knew them sooner. It's called Hearts in Motion. Hearts in Motion is a program that's been around for over 20 years ago, I think. A woman named Karen and a couple others went to Guatemala, and they got involved in some of very impoverished areas, and it broke their heart. The stories every time I hear it, it breaks me, and I understand. Of the things that they ran into that they wanted to serve and minister to. She came home and stirred up awareness and got some other people to give and to go, and they brought teams of medical people on a future trip, and then some funds, and they've tried to help orphans, and they've tried to help feed people, and they tried to help medical care, and they have gone back over and over again with funds they've raised or with people that wanted to have traveled there all across Central and South America as well as specifically Guatemala. And it's amazing work. In fact, they started getting so big, they started to try to find ways to get the word across the country, and they started a couple of resale shops. One of them is right here in Schererville, Indiana, on 41 near 30. If you've not seen it before, Hearts in Motion, people donate their items to the resale shop. They sell them, and the money, after they pay for the building, of course, and any employee cost, all the money 100% goes to the ministry work in Guatemala. In fact, people volunteer to go work at the store to save employee costs so more money can go to the mission work. And it's amazing. In fact, I'll be honest, I never knew about them, I guess. And when we talked about funds to support, Debbie Douglas in our church brought this one to my attention. And I was like, that sounds nice. You know, I wasn't impressed. I mean, I was like, okay, let's consider them. It was another opportunity. And nothing more. And then we met Karen, and my family was impacted in a very powerful way. You're going to get a chance to meet her, not today, but what she's doing is God's work, and I love it. So we love Hearts in Motion, helping people across outside of our own country's borders who are in poverty, as well as the Chicagoland Prison Ministry. And then the third one we've sponsored for many times before is Mommy's Haven. I love Mommy's Haven because it's right here in Lowell, Indiana. It's a ministry that takes care of young single moms who made the decision to take their baby and try to raise their little one themselves when they had no one to stand beside them. They either escaped abuse or they had no one to stand with them, and they took the decision to have and raise this child, but they're struggling and they're young. And Mommy's Haven does something for them that all Christian people should be so excited about. They come alongside of them and say, let's help you succeed. They give them coaching and mentoring, financial help, coaching that way. They have a house they built. People can stay there to get on their feet and live there for a while. They help them get GEDs or college degrees or find jobs, find child care as they need to, get court things worked out legally and documents done. And I mean, they take care of so much with these young mothers who are struggling with nowhere healthy to turn or nowhere to turn at all. And I love their ministry. And we as a church have blessed them before because our food bank sometimes gets baby wipes and formula and diapers given to us, and we'll pass them on to Mommy's Haven. We've bought computers for them before to have the moms at the house be able to get online and do some of these classes or legal things from the house there where they're staying. We have sponsored them before, and this year we want to bless them once more. We love what they're doing. So these three causes, Mommy's Haven for single moms in the local area, all three of them, we have Hearts in Motion globally, a huge need there that will just, once you see more of it, you'll be touched if you aren't already. And Chicagoland Prison Outreach, helping those incarcerated and their families in Illinois and Indiana. These are wonderful programs, and we want to be rich this year by serving them. How do we serve them? Well, there's two ways. One is through what we do. Here's the good news. We're going to have a representative from each of those places here for the next three Sundays, one each week, one from Mommy's Haven, one from Hearts in Motion, one from Chicagoland Prison Outreach. Now, we're not going to focus on these things the whole service. If that is a concern of anybody's, this is our only Sunday to focus exclusively on Be Rich. We're going to have normal church. But at the beginning of each service or the end of the early service, each of the next 3 weeks, one of these representatives will be here to take about five or so minutes and introduce themselves and talk about their ministry and how you can be a part. Just about five or so minutes, and they're going to be in the lobby before or after the service to meet you and answer any questions you may have. And my advice would be this, besides meeting them and hearing from them for a few minutes here, go to the back and find out how they could use help. Maybe they could use help running errands, getting supplies, doing stuff. There's so many hands volunteering at this location. If you want to do something with your hands and feet, talk to them these next 3 weeks as we meet the various representatives of those programs. But besides doing things with our time and energy, I also want to give them some cash. Because all of them, and we know this, just like Lighthouse itself, everyone could use a little bit more of that, right? To get some things fixed or done. And they have needs because they're serving others. We want to give them a check. So, we're asking you to help us do that. You say, well, Arlen, what's our overall goal? I never give an overall goal. You say, well, that's a crummy idea. Probably so. But we have a different kind of goal each year. Our goal is 100% participation. Because not that it has to be one or the other, not that it has to be A or B, but let's pretend if in one scenario we could get two fairly well-off people to be heavy hitters and support this thing and nobody else gives, or we could have everybody collectively give but we get less in, I'd take that of those two options. Because I think that the worst thing to do is for most of us to sit back and say, oh, what does someone else do? That's nice. It's when we all get in the ice rink and it's an all skate that makes a difference in our lives. And so I want 100% participation from all of us. And because of that, we ask for a set amount as a base giving. Every year we say we're going to ask for a set amount, and we've never raised that amount over the last several years, even though inflation has gone up. We have continued to ask each year for you to give, if you could, $39.95 each. Now you're like, oh, Arlen, why not $40? Why $39.95? I don't know. So the infomercials do, and they're smart, so I guess that's what we do too. No, $40. We ask that, and here's why. And we've not raised that, and it's been years. Folks, it's been years. Like, we were asking for $39.95 per each back in 2019, and you know what's happened since then in America and in the world? Like, we should be like $79.95 would be equal to what $39.95 used to be. But we've not asked for more. And the reason why is because we know that this economy has been hard on many of you, and we want to keep the entry low enough. And no one has to do anything, but we want to ask us all to participate. So we keep the number low. And here's the trick. If you can't do that without starving this week because you literally have no food, I mean, you're struggling. If you were to do this, you wouldn't eat. You're going to lose everything. You're going to lose your house. Let me tell you something. You need to talk to us. We want to help you. We have a food bank here. Let us bless you. If you're in that much need, please don't suffer silently. If you're in that kind of trouble, let us help you. You matter to us. Okay. But most of us, we are not that much trouble. And it might just be a couple less trips to Starbucks or Big B, or a couple less trips through McDonald's drive-thru over the next few weeks, and we could probably find $40 somewhere. And if that's you, we want to ask you, would you consider giving that? And you're like, well, is that per person or per person in my house? You decide. I don't know. Sure. I mean, if it, your house, that'd be great, your household. Or if you say there's two working adults in our house, we could each do that. Or that we have that much per person who lives here. I don't care. That's up to you. Do what you can. We wanted to give you a target to strive for that we think everyone can reach on some level. However, there are some of us in this room who have been blessed enough to do more. So while I ask us all to aim for that goal, if you can do more, some of us in this room can throw a zero behind that number and it wouldn't even phase us. And I don't mean 39.950, you math nerds, okay? I mean, we could move the decimal point one spot over, and for some of us, 39950 would, or 400 for some of us, would be no more sacrificial than 40 would be for somebody else, right? So for some of us, giving more would be just as easy as giving less would be for another person. We want everyone to participate, so we say $39.95. But if some of us can say, Arlen, God has blessed me enough that I'm grateful and I'm content and I want to do more because I'm able to, praise the Lord. If some of us can do that, we can get somewhere. And we want to be able to give each of these programs a nice little boost. Now, when? When is the question? And how? When is as soon as possible? More on that momentarily. How? There's two ways to how to give this money. One is on your way out, there are giving boxes at every single exit, every single Sunday. You can give it there. There's actually cards. There's envelopes. You can write on the envelope, this is for Be Rich. By the way, if it's for Be Rich, write Be Rich on the envelope. Otherwise, it's going to go to the general fund. That reminds me. For those of you who do give regularly to Lighthouse, thank you. We need that. Please don't take your regular giving to Lighthouse and divert it to Be Rich. That's just robbing Peter to pay Paul. That's not going to hurt. That's going to just hurt everything, right? Thanks for your regular giving. We do need it too. We count on it too. But if you can go above and beyond this season to Be Rich with $39.95 or whatever God calls you to do, grab an envelope, you could put it on there, right? Be Rich on the envelope or on your check memo and drop it in the box. You could go online and give digitally. You can give through texting on our website. There's actually a link on our website that says Be Rich. You can go follow that to our giving section. You can give through text. You can give one-time gifts. You can give recurring gifts. You could even give cryptocurrency. That's how cool we are. Okay, so anyhow, my point is this. There's different ways to give, but jump in somehow and find a way to be generous this season. Now, when do we want to raise this by? Fast, because if we can get the money raised and sent to these organizations by the end of November, they can put them into work at the beginning of December and bless those they want to bless before Christmas. Make sense? So we want to celebrate this earlier than we sometimes do and get it done this month. And I know that when we procrastinate a good idea, procrastinating simply makes us do nothing in the long run most of the time. So sooner the better. And so I'm going to ask you to join me as God lays it on your heart. That's Be Rich this year. We'll meet some people the next couple of weeks, but we'll do other sermons. So don't worry, we're not going to keep fleecing you every week. We're just going to let you meet some awesome people for a few minutes and remind you to do what we talked about today. Before I'm done, I want to review a couple quick things and we'll be finished. I want to remind you that Paul was writing to Timothy about a church full of people in Ephesus, and he said to them, hey, tell those people who are rich in this world to act like it. How? By being content. Folks, can I say this to all of you today? Can we just be content? I don't mean don't be saving or investing or, you know, don't quit your job. I don't need anything. No, I mean, do what you're going to do, right? You know, make smart decisions. But don't long to be rich. Don't crave money. Don't let this become a dangerous pitfall. Instead, say, God has given me so much that while I strive to do the best I can for myself and others, I'm content with what I have. That kind of peace will never be fixed on the external. It only comes from within. Be content. And then, can we be rich in good works? Can we be rich in generosity? Can we share with those who have less than we do? And I don't know about you, but that's a pretty good recipe. That's a good biblical recipe. As Paul said earlier, teach those who are rich in this world to be rich.